This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Liz Sakuro joins us on the long line from her home in Connecticut. Good afternoon, Liz.
Hey, Coy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate your time. Now, this is the first time that we've had a chance to talk since William Beebe was sentenced just a few weeks ago. I guess it's been a couple of weeks now, two or three weeks.
So. I guess it was March 15th. I'm just coming up for air.
Yes, I can imagine. Liz, we definitely want to talk about the case and talk about your reaction to the sentencing. But just by way of introduction for folks who may not be familiar with this story, and they would have to be under a rock if they are not, this has been has made really national news here, but
I know it's so bizarre.
It must be bizarre.
I mean, because it's me, I don't understand. I guess I do understand the curiosity because it is a very rare case.
Yeah, yeah. And let's talk about why it's rare. Now, you were a first-year student at the University of Virginia, just by way of a quick introduction here. You were a first-year student at UVA in the fall of 1984.
Yes, exactly.
And went to a fraternity party.
Right.
And went upstairs with a young man.
Okay, No.
Okay. Clarify, thanks.
No, I went to the party with a gay friend of mine who wanted to pass, quote unquote. You know, back then people weren't out. And, you know, during Rush there's a need to be accepted. And, you know, part of what was the tradition, I know then and now, is their house tours. And when you're surrounded by friends, and there were a few people there that I knew, we went as a group upstairs, and I was given something. We know now sort of what it was. I can't really talk about it. I was slipped something in my drink and separated from my friends. And so this is what we know. What I know is that of Beebe, and I remember that attack, certainly. And he... He then came to my dorm and wrote a threatening note on my door because I had threatened to go to authorities, which I did, and, you know, I went to the dean of students, and nothing got done, and he dropped out of school, and so it was pretty much a mess all around because I really wasn't heard by the people who I felt had a responsibility to pick up the phone and say something. I mean, you know, student governance only works so much, you know.
Right, right.
I have a big problem with that. I don't think honor trials or judiciary trials are there for things like rape. So, but I'm not going to get on that soapbox now. But that was generally the story. And then 20 years later, I went to my mailbox. I was there with my two-year-old, and my husband threw the mail on my lap, and it was a letter from Mr. Beebe apologizing for it. And we began an email communication, and people are always like, well, why did you email him? Well, I needed to know his mental status. When someone who has raped you emails you or says they've known where you live for 9 years, which is what he indicated. He indicated that he called UVA alumni office and had been keeping tabs on me for 9 years, and I think that's extraordinarily creepy. I emailed him just to make sure he was where he said he was, or who, you know, really who was he and that sort of thing. So, out of that began this email correspondence that was very painful.
Liz Sakuro is our guest, and during that email conversation that you had with William Beebe, you're in Connecticut, and he's in, what, California?
I was actually on Long Island at the time, and I believe he's in Vegas. That's where he was arrested.
In Vegas. Did he write in those emails, I'm sorry I raped you, or something to that effect?
Yes. Yes, he did.
And then you decided to bring charges against him, because, of course, there is no statute of limitations here in Virginia for rape.
Actually, Coy, that's incorrect. That's correct, but I didn't decide to press charge. I didn't really know what I was doing. The emails became more and more erratic and sort of bizarre, and so I didn't know about any statute of limitations at all. I had no idea, because here in New York we're very used to our, I believe, 10-year statute, and it wasn't an exercise in order to quote-unquote get him or anything like that. I was just concerned, so I didn't even tell anybody. I just picked up the phone and I called Chief Longo and I said, this is what's happening, this is what had happened, and can you help me? I don't really know what to do. I'm a little nervous. So that's how the charges came to be.
And, of course, the case ensued, and then he was recently sentenced in mid-March. He was sentenced to 18 months. Now, let's talk about the case, because the last time we spoke, we did not get an opportunity to do that. It was actually ongoing, so you really couldn't talk about it.
Right, right. There's still a lot I can't talk about, but at least I can educate the listeners as to... I mean, it's a long process. I mean, that was 18 months. We live in a law and order world where we think it's over in 2 weeks, and that's not true. The sentence is actually part of a plea agreement that Mr. Beebe was indicted on two counts of felony rape and object sexual penetration, which, I'm sorry, that's unappetizing, but he pled down to the guilty, I'm sorry, I'm very tired.
That's okay.
He pled down to the offense of aggravated sexual battery.
So he did not plead guilty to rape?
No.
He pled guilty to aggravated sexual battery.
Correct. He cut a deal with the prosecution in order to help the future prosecution of others who were involved that night.
And that we definitely want to ask about that. But
yeah.
He was sentenced for what he pled, and he was sentenced to 18 months. Is that correct?
Well, he pled in November, and he was sentenced to 10 years, all but 18 months to serve, and then 500 hours of community service. You know, working to educate students about sexual assault and alcohol consumption, which I'm not sure I agree with. I don't know if a sex offender should be talking to people about sexual assault. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, that is interesting.
You know,
I
think Judge Hogshire is an amazing person, but I think you need to think about, what sort of. I don't know if you want a convicted sex offender going onto campuses. That's just me. That's just my opinion.
Liz Securo is our guest. Liz, do you know when he starts serving?
He reported that day.
Oh, he did? 15th. Okay. So
yeah,
he is in prison now?
Yes. He's at Charlottesville Albemarle Regional right now.
Okay. Liz, tell us about the case. Tell us what was going on that folks who weren't there every day may not be aware of, some of the things that went on during the trial.
I think what people don't understand is that it varies state by state, but when you're actively a witness, and that's what I am, it's not me versus Beebe, it's Commonwealth versus Beebe, it's a daily ongoing thing. The police call you every day, do you remember this, do you remember that? You know, you're speaking with Claude Worrell, who is my deputy assistant district Commonwealth attorney, every day. It's a very draining process to navigate the system, and you get a wonderful victim advocate, in my case, Sherry Murphy, who, I speak with her almost every day. But I think what people don't understand is when you're raising a family and you have a job, it's mind-boggling how much time is spent just on the red tape of it all and that sort of thing. And just, having new developments break every day and things that you didn't know as me, and then things that we don't know and things that they don't know. And, it's a game. And the other thing that's surprising, too, is when you write a victim impact statement that's used for sentencing. And I was always under the impression that I would get to actually say my piece, that you actually stand up and you get to say to your perpetrator, I forgive you and this is the impact it's had on my life. But you don't. The judge reads it, and it's taken into account. But the accused gets to put on his case with all of his character witnesses, and I, as the, I don't like the word victim, but it's just the technical term. Basically, just sit there, and you don't get to say this is how it affected me. And in other states, you can, and that that disappointed me a little bit.
And in Virginia, just the way it works here, you weren't allowed to do that.
Right. That's just the way. Yeah. Exactly.
I thought it was interesting, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but he told you in the emails, 20 years ago when we were college students, I raped you. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
And then when the trial came up, he said...
He recanted.
He recanted
like,
the
no,
whole thing.
No, that's not what I did at all. I didn't rape her at all. And no, I'm innocent. So, I really don't know what to do with that.
Yeah. And then he ended up pleading guilty, of course. And one of the most shocking things to come out of the trial is that...
Yes.
And you can... I know you're limited on what you can discuss here, but...
Correct.
He pled guilty to a lesser charge, and it was a plea deal so that he would provide testimony against others who were involved that same night?
Correct.
At that same fraternity house?
Yes.
Can you tell us or educate us at all about this process or about what is public that you can share with us?
Nothing is public. There are things known to myself and to the police and to the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, but it is literally ongoing. And when I mean ongoing, I mean as we speak, I know that there are detectives out there speaking to people. I think the hope is that after 22 years, say you have a family now, you have a wife, you have a child, you know, that you might, I understand the bonds of fraternity brotherhood. I mean, I married a UVA fraternity boy, you know, so it's not, and so for people who think that it's about that, it's not, but I would hope that somebody would come forward and say, yes, I know exactly what happened, I was there. So right now it's really about getting enough evidence. It's like any case. It's like any case. I mean, when you can have a whole lot of circumstantial, and that doesn't get you anywhere, you know.
But what we do know is that Beebe is providing testimony that implicates some of his fraternity brothers in similar assaults on other women or on you as well.
So far, Beebe has not provided that information. So it has been discovered through other channels. I don't know if he cannot or he will not. We don't know. There's no way of knowing. To my knowledge, we're just talking about me, but who knows? You know, this thing develops and has more, you know, for every eight legs of the octopus, there's eight more legs. It is insane. I think it's a great thing to teach other people that even though you think you know what you know, there is a lot that you don't know. The problem with the rest of the case is obviously your memory is broken. I mean, and toxicology will point to that. Your memory can be broken into a million little pieces. You know, being unconscious certainly does not help. So, I mean, I'm less involved in the active day-to-day with whatever the upcoming cases will be. Although I think the whole point is I have every right to know what happened to me that night in totality, as loathsome as it is. I mean, what I know already is loathsome, but I think in order to completely heal, you need to know.
Liz Sicuro is our guest this afternoon from her home in Connecticut. And then we'll move on, but just so folks know, this isn't the last we've heard of this. There are, as we speak, there are ongoing investigations about other men who were in that fraternity house on that evening.
Correct.
What was your reaction to the sentencing?
What people don't know is you sort of know what's coming down the pike when deals are being discussed. And you know, even though we had Mr. Worrell had asked for 2 years and he got 18 months, I mean, I think it's very fair. I think it's, although I really wish Mr. Beebe had been more forthcoming or will be more forthcoming about his cooperation. I also thought, you know, in the sentencing, at not one time, you know, and I acknowledged, you know, Mr. Beebe's mother is very ill, and I acknowledged that in my victim impact statement. I acknowledged my forgiveness of Mr. Beebe. I acknowledged so. And not once did Ms. Quagliana, his counsel, acknowledge what her client had did to me. And I think it would have been, as a matter of fact, she called me self-serving and ugly. And I was like, what? I think rape is self-serving and ugly, to be frank with you. And I just wished at one point either he or his attorney might have acknowledged, you know, that I had been through something that was less than, you know, wonderful, that they had not. As a matter of fact, she still kept calling it a thoughtless sex encounter, and I did bristle at that because that's not what it was. He pled guilty to aggravated sexual battery. That is not a thoughtless college sex encounter. So that disturbed me, you know, and I always wanted people to know this was never about AA. I applaud his sobriety. I think the people that came as character witnesses to the courthouse, I mean, I think that really does speak to his being a leader in the recovery community, and that's something to be commended. And I freely did that. I just wish somebody had said, you know what, this, you know, it almost felt anticlimactic, like, okay, he's going to jail, but he still doesn't feel like he's guilty. And, you know, I can't really, that's just my own personal feeling.
Would you like to see him perhaps have gotten more time?
No, I don't think the amount of time matters at all. I really don't. I think a lot of, I've received hundreds of letters and emails where people think, mostly from men who think that he got a very light sentence. But it's not germane to it, really. I really feel as though our justice system worked in this case. You know, I have fellow survivors whose rapist got 50 years. I mean, what is it, you know? I mean, I think a lot of people, I think the judge took into account certainly the fact that he self-reported and that he, you know, admitted his crime, even though he then recanted it and defended himself.
Right, so, right.
I think it's fine.
Liz, you were a first-year student at the University of Virginia when this happened. You went to the officials, you went to folks and sought help, and you were...
I went everywhere. I banged the drum as far as I went to the university police, I went to every dean I knew, I went everywhere.
And the very, very sad and tragic thing that we still have to face is that this still happens all the time on university campuses, and women come forward, mm-hmm. and we regret to say, hopefully, never again at UVA, but it's not uncommon for a young woman to be told, well, don't worry about it, or we'll take care of it. And you are making efforts now to reach out to these young women to let them know you keep speaking up until something is done.
Absolutely. And I'm going to, you know, there's something called the Clery Act, and that needs to be enforced. And you know, the university can spin whatever they want. There was a front page headline, the Cavalier Daily, I don't know if it was 2006, or it said that 15 out of the 16 sororities had reported a sexual assault on one of their members during rush, and then no follow-up. And I just pulled out the article the other day, and I never heard another thing about it. And, you know, and it's not only young women, it's young men. And I never want, this has not ever been a women's issue for me. It's always been a human rights issue. And certainly I'm no activist. And to me, part of the thing is I need to educate myself before I can even begin to speak out about this. I can only speak to my experience, but I need to learn and absorb and listen, you know, before I can make change happen. But I also, to the flip side to that, you can't complain about the way things are unless you're prepared to do something. So that's sort of what drives me at this point.
And you have created an organization that reaches out to these young women, and I think there is a website. I want to give you an opportunity to let folks know where that is.
Our website, to add fuel to the fire, when it rains, it pours, our web designer was just like arrested for fraud. So our original website, which was so lovely and had the grant request in there, is temporarily down, and we're actually redoing it right now, but it's www.starspluralsurvivors.com. And you can try .org in a couple of days, and it might be back.
And Liz, have a lot of women been in touch with you through this process, other women?
Thousands. And mostly men. I am amazed at the number of male survivors. I'm amazed at the number of people in the recovery in AA who are also survivors. I mean, it's really been an eye-opening experience, because I think that you're really, you know, and obviously I get a lot, you know, not a lot, but when you have 99 pieces of good mail and one piece of hate mail, you obviously focus on the hate mail. But I can't give people the satisfaction of knowing that. But at the same time, we get grants from as far away, grant requests from as far away as Africa. So, you know, if we've started a dialogue, then we're doing what we set out to do. And I think that's really the key. If people are now talking about, you know, that word rape, no one likes to use it. We can talk about beheading people and mass murder and terrible, terrible things, but it's the last American taboo. And if anything, you know, I was very naive in going forward. I never planned to come out or go forward. My name just happened to be released to the press. And my story was being told, and being told completely not factually. So I decided to participate and didn't realize the media beast. I'm sorry. But I think that in speaking out, it helps people to have a voice, those who don't have a voice. And I can't tell you how many people are always like, you know, thank you for saying what I always wanted to say. And, you know, because most victims of sexual assault or incest or rape really don't ever report it. And if this makes one person say, you know what, I can go through the system, I can do this too, then we'll have done our job. But, you know, most all of that credit, it's hard to be the person, certainly, but you know what, if I can make it easier for other people, then I think it's all worth it. I mean, I wish March 15th had been the end of it. I do.
Well, that was my last question here. Is his sentencing, does it offer any type of closure for you?
Yes, I mean, that piece is over. I mean, I think that a lot of people always say to me, well, you know, once he's up for parole, then you're looking over your shoulder again. No, I don't think I will be. I think this piece is over, and I'm not concerned about it. I think closure is something that you have to seek for yourself. No judgment can ever give someone closure. That's my responsibility, and I've always said that. You know, you can't be a victim, and I'm not. You know, you have to take responsibility for your own life and your own happiness. And it's not something that ruled my world for 20 years, but boy, it does rip it open when it's that sudden. I mean, you cope with it, and it's part of who you are, but it doesn't define who you are. And I don't think anyone was ever expecting. I've gotten a lot of mail from people who run into their rapist 6 years later, and they always say, I'm really sorry for what I did. So it's more common than you think, and it's not always in the AA 12-step program. So, you know, yes, March 15th was a landmark for me in that I could put that piece behind me.
William Beebe was sentenced to 18 months for aggravated sexual battery that he committed at the University of Virginia in a fraternity house in the fall of 1984. Liz, thank you so much for
spending some time with us. I wish I were more articulate today. No. A little under the weather. We have bad weather up here. So.
Well, just try to stay warm up there.
All right. Thanks a lot, Coy.
Take care. Absolutely.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.